It's Wednesday, February 16th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 221 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 48 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
I'm still Wayne.
This is Pat.
My name is Jeff.
And this is Chris.
And I'm not on Kicked in the Dice Bags right now.
You is. I was listening to you a little bit today.
You're in a crowded room, though, that's for sure.
I am.
All right, you know what? I was going to save that for the next episode, because tonight we're recording two, since we weren't able to record last week.
No, those guys, they deserve their credit.
They do. So, Chad, you finally become a podcast whore.
Yes, I did. My first guest appearance on podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You made an appearance over on the new and improved Kicked in the Dice Bags.
Great bunch of guys. And I'm not just saying this because they had me on their show and I just want to pimp myself. They are actually a really great bunch of guys. I had a very, very good time. It's hilarious. I don't know if the episode was good or not, but I had a good time doing it.
I'm listening to it right now. It's not so bad. I'm going to be on there tomorrow.
Thanks.
I'm just trying to... He beats while we're recording.
Yeah. Chris, you could probably contribute more if you weren't listening to it while we're recording.
No. He's listening to me. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to rate this review in the fact that they called you a luminary for the first time.
Yes.
I was a luminary. I was rolling my eyes.
Besides,
at that.
Chad, he could have either show on and be listening to you. I mean,
that's true. That's true. He can't hear me from his house.
Also, I want to say happy birthday to you guys down there because today, by the way, is the day that St. Louis was found. And I know you don't live in St. Louis, but everybody associates you with St. Louis.
I live in St.
Louis, Missouri. Was founded.
No, actually,
on this recording day.
I am the only one who does not live in St. Louis County. The rest of them do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of us live in St. Louis City, but everyone but me lives
in St. Louis County.
In
St. Louis City.
Well, no.
If we're tangenting Dan before he starts, I have a surprise for him.
Okay.
Oh. So I was going through the other day a bunch of books out at a store, and I found a book that has two of your passions in the same book.
Okay.
You have a passion for knowing the origin of words and the origin of phrases, and you are a big animal lover that likes dogs. So I have for you a book called
Dog Phrases?
Dog the Wag, that is all about phrases, words that have dogs in them or were related to dogs and the origin of those words and phrases.
He told me he couldn't contain himself today at work. He had to tell me the origin of the Doberman Pinscher, which is actually pretty interesting, I will have to admit.
The book was interesting enough, I bought a copy for myself, too, and it's...
I got
a kick out of it, but when I saw it, there was no book that has ever jumped out at me on the shelf as much as that one and said, this book is for Dan.
Much-hated German tax collector was tired of getting abused, so he bred vicious attack dogs to protect him while he went to go collect
taxes.
Over
the course of 20 years.
Yeah, which was where the Doberman Pinschers came from.
That's some serious German patience right there.
I'm going to have to read through this now and find some choice selections. It won't be for next episode since that's in like an hour, but perhaps for the episode thereafter. So thank you, Wayne. This is entertaining and amusing. So I have a story of my own, and then we'll actually get to relevant things. I got blocked today.
Oh.
In fact, I may have to bleep this, but I got blocked today, so to speak.
Nice.
I was with Christian and a guy named Ryan, both people I work with who I know. Christian I mentioned on the show before, and we were going out to lunch to meet a friend of Christian's who needed some help trying to figure out how to set up a technical project because he's a sales guy and he didn't know where to begin. And I've only seen this guy like once or twice before over the course of many years. And since the last time I saw him, I've had my hair cut short. So I fear there's a good chance this guy's not going to recognize me. So he comes in, sits down. Christian's like hiding his head for some reason just to be a jackass. And so this guy's like looking around and doesn't see anyone he recognizes. So I'm like, screw it. I get up, walk over to his table, sit down totally deadpan, straight-faced, and was about to say, so are you lonely in St. Louis 44? Right as I opened my mouth to say it, he suddenly recognized me. He had been looking at me for 5 minutes and did not recognize me, but the second I sat down and opened my mouth about to whip out this gem, he recognized me.
At least you have that one. You can save it.
I know. I still have it for something else. Yes. I don't know
why. The odd thing is I sat down next to Pat one time and said that. And he said, yes, I am. I don't know what that means, but...
Oh,
it means he's playing the odds.
Pat's lonely in the bathtub, 44. Yep. All right. So anyway, let's go ahead and welcome Jeff more properly to the show. Jeff is going to be guesting with us for the next two episodes.
Yay!
Jeff is a part of our Sunday gaming group, and Jeff also has his own podcast. So, Jeff, I wonder if you would just tell us real quick what the name of that podcast is, what it's about, and who's on it with you.
That's The Gaming Asylum. It's available on iTunes. There's me, Mark, and Michael. All three of us met on the Fear the Boot forums. We talk about role-playing games and video games primarily from a design point of view, and we've got 3 episodes out there, and we'd love to hear what you think.
And for anyone that's on our forums, I believe that's what Asylum Runner
and DT Defender.
DT Defender, right. So if you're interested in checking that out, they're still working on a website, but I will at least put a link to their feed in the show notes. If you're interested,
possibly help them get a website.
Yes.
We do have one. I think it's longer than gamingasylum.com, and I also think there may actually be already a gamingasylum.com.
All right, so if you have a GeoCities account, you can log in.
It's Gaming Asylum. Darn, I only people have Angel who love Fire. Video games, and we're a podcast.com/Libsyn
/TildeAngelFire.GeoCities.
Hey, it's like his character write-ups. It's 3 pages long.
.MySpace.
3 pages if I'm lucky.
All right, so 2 things on Fear the Con 4. First off, with the con drawing near, we'll look at the numbers, and the numbers are looking solid. We are well on course to beat attendance from previous years. I'm very excited about Woo-hoo. That. This is going to be a great con. But the one thing we're hurting for as a result
is... Pole dancers.
No, Pat's got that.
Oh.
Pat is that. GMs specifically for RPGs. If you are interested or able to run a role-playing game at Fear the Con, we could definitely use more, because the RPG events in particular have just packed out in a hurry. And there are a lot of people that are thinking about coming to the con who've communicated to me or to other organizers, well, I want to come, but I don't see a whole lot I can get into right now. And, you know, some people just want to come and play. They don't want to run something or whatever, which I understand. So if you're willing to run a game at Fear the Con, please, by all means, get out there and get it signed up.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we have more games, more activities listed than we did last year.
And they're full.
And they're still all full.
Yeah. The second thing is, if you are interested in sharing a room or ride, be sure to check those threads. For example, I know there's one guy in particular who's looking to set up a carpool all the way from Seattle, but he's having trouble finding people to take that cost up with him. So if you live in another city and want to come, but just don't think you can afford the price of gas or whatever, then be sure to hop on that thread and look around, because there may be other people in your exact same city and your exact same situation.
Or people on the way.
Or people on the way. I guess if I don't know exactly what's on the highways between here and Seattle, but you might be in an intervening city. So now down to actual role-playing game stuff. We have 2 topics that we brought up in previous episodes, asked for some feedback on, and these have since played out, so it only seems fair to back up and actually tell you guys how your advice and insight actually impacted our game. The first of those situations was a couple episodes back, we talked about dealing with tainted characters. You know, when you feel like a character's gone in a direction you didn't want him to go. And the specific case study we were using was my character, a gnoll named Gnarl. During a game when I was not there, Chad put him in a situation, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to continue playing him after that situation. We asked for some feedback, and people gave feedback in along a variety of things. As the saying goes, if you take 5 people, you get 6 opinions. But the general thrust of the feedback was to see it as something to overcome. That in the story and the journey of most quote-unquote great individuals, there's some point where they fall off the path and have to find their way back on, or they encounter something that their society would otherwise not allow, and they have to find some way to turn that problem into a success. And so that is pretty much the way I tried to approach it. I tried to step back, put my panties in perspective, and basically say, okay, you know what? Something happened to the character I didn't like. I don't want to be unfaithful to the character or to the culture that I have created in this collaborative game about what gnolls are supposed to be like. But is there some way that I can turn this into a point of victory? And there were several things that occurred that allowed that to happen. The first of which was the fact that Chad, as the game master, adjusted to the situation. One of the things he put out was, he said, well, do you want to just rewind it or retcon it?
The 3 R's.
Yeah.
It was roll with it, rewind it or retcon it.
And I, with the latter two, I said I accept rewinding and retconning as options, but to me they cheapen the game.
Yeah, and in our case, it made it even more difficult to do either of those options because we started the game up again after a long break without you for one more week.
Yeah.
So we had to roll 1 week after this with the taint of your character working as this anchor holding us back.
We kind of tucked it under the covers and said we're going to consider, but
we moved forward.
I really have to tell you, I do not like playing with Gnarl's taint.
No, Gnarl taint.
You know, I was trying to think of one to say there too, Pat, but thank you for beating me to it. That was pretty good. I give you credit for that one.
I wasn't actually on the episode where everyone talked about Gnarl's taint. So I'm at home at the time. I'm looking at my phone as Chad is tweeting this stuff out. We're talking about Dan's taint tonight. I'm like, what is going on? I'm glad I'm not there. I don't want to be around for this.
You know, forget anything about maturity or whatever. Am I the only one where when we talk about a Gnarl's taint, my mind doesn't go there because...
Yes, you're the only one.
It is just something I don't even want to picture.
Sometimes you just can't avoid and you just can't unsee things in your head.
How can you not picture it? They're always lifting their tail up and throwing it in your face.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Absolutely.
It taint your balls and it taint your ass. It taint so bad.
And Chad's tweet did not mention Knowles or Gnarl. Chad's tweet mentions Dan's taint.
Well, I'm it like, was Dan's issue and Dan's character. Dan had the taint.
All right, so... Moving out of the fourth grade.
Let's rock it into fifth.
Chad provided those options. And I said I didn't want to rewind or retcon because of the fact that to me it cheapens the game. However, the other thing you said is, well, what if we were to turn this into some kind of a struggle to where the events occurred, but he was still able to have some victory in it? Mm-hmm. And the scene that we played out without prescripting it was he took it down to... This is what's going on inside of your mind, that there's this other presence in there and you're fighting with it. And here's a character who is completely non-magical, being possessed by a being and having to find things within his own culture and his own thought processes that would give him some kind of a leverage over this. Mm-hmm. And the way that I'd written the Gnarl's culture, they're very animistic. And so kind of the turning point is he's fighting with all the strength of will he has, but then ultimately when that's not enough to do any more than hang on, he starts calling upon all the names of these ancestors he can remember from the shamanic stories and the traditions of his people. And Chad describes how these other Gnarls start appearing within his vision, you know, within this kind of dream space that he's within and fighting this creature that's in him. And they kind of free him from it, giving him sort of a sense of purpose and destiny. So he had been used and abused, but nonetheless was still able to fight it in some way. And then from there, he gets out of the prison that had left him in, tracks down and kills the chick that did it to him, and then goes up to Pat's character and basically said, okay, I've avenged myself. My next goal is if you will give me the time, I will redeem myself. And so it went from a defeat to a new goal, to a new way of proving himself. So I want to thank you guys for the great advice. It worked out wonderfully in the game, and it kept the game in order and kept what I have found to be a very enjoyable character part of the game without betraying the sanctity of the plot. Good job to everyone out there in Bootland.
So one other thing we had a chance to try in that very game session was the whole concept of jumping into an NPC. To be honest,
I really had to softball this one for you guys,
well,
too.
And that's the thing is, you didn't, and I don't think everyone else realizes that.
Oh, I did.
Because I don't know if it's jumping in or being pushed.
I tried it earlier in that game, and you crushed it.
How did
because
I
you
crush
thought
it?
I was joking. There was a point early in the game where there were a bunch of guards around Gnarl's character, just as Dan's character Gnarl is bust free and he's free. There are a bunch of guards there, and I make my attempt on my own to jump into a character. You know, Gnarl asked for, where are my weapons? And the guard is ready to hand over his weapons. I jump into a guy next to him. He's like, but this is the guy that just slaughtered all of our people upstairs. And he thought I was joking because he wasn't expecting it.
Wayne didn't do, like, I jump into the guard, or the guard says, or the guard says, like this. To my perspective, Wayne cracked a one-liner.
Well, it sounded like a metagame comment.
Yeah, but Wayne made a metagame, and that was my misinterpretation.
And so that's one of the things about this concept that has confused me going in, is how do you do this as a player? I still don't know as a player how
not
to grab a character.
Not quite as subtly as you did.
Because I tried it,
well,
and I'm expecting one-on-one, and it didn't happen.
Back chat and a certain amount of, you know, common, and it's tough to distinguish with the GM. Do you mean this, or are you just kidding around?
Yeah, right. And I know why he thought it was just an offhanded joke, but it left me still wondering afterwards, how do I as a player jump in? Later on in the same game, he softballed it. He basically stopped and said, okay, you're this person, you're this person, you're this person, go.
Yeah, thinking back now, I do remember that, and it's exactly how you described it, that you said that, but because the way you said it, it could have been an offhanded, like, but this is the guy that just killed everyone upstairs. Right. Why would the guard do this versus you actually playing another guard?
Yeah, and that was partially a failure on my part because I don't understand the concept of just jumping in. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. So it's like, this is the perfect opportunity. There could have been a guy up there that was in that situation that wouldn't be comfortable just handing weapons over. I can challenge my boss. My boss and I can argue. But I didn't know how to do that.
You know, Wayne, could I give you two suggestions? And these guys might have more, but there's two that come to my mind for helping with that. One is to declare a clearly in-game action prior to that. For example, saying another guard steps up and holds up a hand and says, this is the guy who just killed everyone upstairs. Are you sure we want to do this? Which makes it clear you're playing another character. Or option two, similar to option one, is take a different voice. And if you're not comfortable taking voice, then you may not want to do option two. But same thing, if you take an obviously different voice than your own, whether it's in meter or in pitch or whatever, that could also help cue the game master that this is not a metagame quip. This is an in-game attempt to play somebody. I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that or not that might help.
Yeah, but the only thing I would add to that would be to just don't do it.
Why?
So that's a discussion for perhaps another right, Chris, episode. I wasn't on that episode.
Oh, wait. Let me answer come for on. Chris. Players are evil, and they're only going to try and wreck the masterpiece that is your game. And if it's your game and you control everything and the players have no rights because all they want is power, 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 power.
It's like listening to my own voice.
Yeah. It's like listening to bad GMing advice.
All right, so hold on. I want to hear this. Let's let Chris talk. Chris, why do you not think this is a good idea? Because you weren't on that episode to give this absurdity.
No, I was not on that episode. I posted in the discussion thread for that episode that episode would have been very different, actually, had I been on there. And really, honestly, my reasoning for this doesn't have anything to do with what Chad said. Because I'm not necessarily against players doing that. The problem that it is for me is that when a player jumps into the role of an NPC, and if the situation, by the way, I'll preface this by saying, if the situation warrants itself where this could be done, I really don't have a problem with it. In fact, I think it would be a lot of fun. And like I said to Wayne a few episodes before, that ultimately I think it would be a much more rewarding and rich experience if the situation warrants it. But my biggest problem with this is that when I am either running a game or when I'm on the other side and I'm playing the game, I'm looking around me and dealing with everything that I'm dealing with as being really real in the sense of that game, so that there's not anything to me which would be quote-unquote unnecessary for that game, you know, to the plot or the story or whatever. Everything there to me is real. So when someone else jumps into a role, then that realism for me is broken. In your situation that you described, I would want all of the players around the table to think that every guard in that situation has relevancy to what might happen. And so if suddenly one of the other players takes on the personality of that guard, to me, that particular guard now suddenly becomes, it's like I, as the GM, have acknowledged that that guy really isn't that important to the story or the plot or whatever it is that you guys are engaged in. So go ahead and have your fun little interaction with him, but really you're not advancing the story or you're not.
I don't understand why you would feel that way.
And part of that is a different GMing style between the two of you, I think, because in Chad's GMing style,
absolutely,
if I jumped into that guard and I dropped, you know, the name of a city or something, he'd then use that. If it's a cool thing that I dropped out there, that's now part of the game. That guard did play an important role.
Well, let me ask you a question, though, Chris, because I understand maybe there's a distinction between, let's say, you and Chad, because Chad actually might be drawing on that for materials and improv and collaborative GM, whereas you being more on the scripted side might see that as an interruption of your flow. But as someone else who leans towards the scripted side myself, I guess let me put it to you this way. Would you at least concede that not everyone in the world is significant, and therefore there are people out there, whether in your descriptions or not, who are inconsequential enough for someone to grab as a color item?
Absolutely. And like I said at the beginning of this, if the situation warrants it, you know, no doubt about it, or even if I lay this out beforehand saying, hey, if you guys want to jump into any characters in here, go for it. But I guess the best analogy I could come up with here off the top of my head would be like if you were watching a movie, really isn't the best analogy, but if you're watching a movie and there's background characters and the main characters are in a cafe, if someone from the audience was to run up and then basically jump into the screen and start playing one of the characters in the background in the cafe.
I would say, wow! That's awesome!
I get what you're
saying. How do I do that?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I do. I don't know that I entirely agree with it, but I do understand where you're coming from. And I think this is why when we did the topic, the big overarching rule that I wanted to put forth was respect the GM, that if I knew the GM really had a tight sense of what he wanted out of each scene and wasn't comfortable with someone jumping in like that, then I would certainly respect that and not do it.
Right, absolutely. And I don't want to come across as being very ham-fisted about the way this is done, because really it's a very cool concept, and you can really have a ton of fun with doing something like this, no doubt about it. And it is hard to describe, but for me, it breaks the realism, and I don't want my players to not feel that something isn't relevant or isn't really necessary. And those are the best words I can use to describe it.
I take the opposite tack, because the players, when they jump into the NPCs, they can make them even more relevant. What was a bodyguard to a crime lord that I'm playing as an important NPC, and the bodyguard is just quite literally a guy who jumps in front of the bullet or something like that, the player jumps into him who isn't there or whatever, and suddenly that guard comes alive. He gets depth and he gets color and he has meaning. And then if he says something, and I admit this is because I do a lot of improv with it, if he suddenly starts challenging the boss, like, boss, I don't think we should be doing this to kids, well, suddenly then that opens up this whole line that I haven't planned for. The whole scene explodes in a good way. All this color, all this emotion. Of course, it could go bad and wrong, but you know what? Because the rewards are so great, you know, I guess there's risks too, but
I do see what you're saying. And like I said, I don't think that there's really anything wrong with it other than everything, but, no, but it is two distinct styles, and what you're saying isn't necessarily completely incorrect. I mean, yes, it certainly can.
Oh, thank you.
Things certainly can come alive a heck of a lot more, and you can really add that depth, absolutely. But to me, the way I look at it, it's a fourth wall breaker is really what it is.
I think you come from a GMing tradition where the GM controls everything.
And it's a very top-down.
Top-down, yeah. And I don't mean that in a divisive way. I don't mean that as say, oh, well, you're just a controlling GM. No, I mean, it's a very more traditional GMing style where the GM controls every aspect. And the only input the players have is their characters and everything their characters do. Which is great. I mean, that's fine. That's a game right there.
All the books we read growing up, learning role-playing games, they teach this almost.
Yes, yes. Like I said, I think that you just come from the style where the GM controls every single aspect of the game that isn't the player's characters. And I think that role-playing games can handle that perfectly fine. And everybody playing that game can have fun. But I think that games have also grown and expanded to where there can be a lot more collaboration now between players and GMs, to where it's not players playing their wonderful characters in the GM's wonderful game. The GM has influence over the characters the players are playing, and the players have influence over the GM's storyline. And it's a collab. You're telling a story together. You're creating the story together. You're collaborating and moving the story together forward.
I kind of get where he's coming from, though. One of the concerns I'd had originally was that this could become more of a silly thing in a regular game. This can feel like it was an aside. In our case, it was a bad example because, like you said, it was a softball.
Right,
you had to
right.
actually point to everyone around the table.
Someone said that they wanted to do it before the next episode, and it just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure it got in.
And to be honest, that's kind of what it felt like. It was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It interrupted the flow of the game we had going. I don't think it has to, but
right,
I think
right.
it can. And that's why I kind of see where Chris is coming from to this, because in that case, I think it did. It was fun, but it was something new, different, and it was something to the side. It did mix itself in with the flow of the game.
Well, you know, and it's for me, it's not so much the flow as it is, I keep going back to this word, but as it is the believability of what you're experiencing. If I'm the one who started off this session and either I read my box text or I threw my description out there for this is what's going on here and this is what's happening here or whatever, I have assumed this position as being the person who is launching the story. And so in other words, I'm the one who has a general idea of whatever it is you do, how it's going to affect that story. And because absolutely the player should have a ton of input on the game master story, and almost in a certain sense they should try and break that story, because yeah, the GM, he sits down and he has his notes and he has his plan, what he wants to do, but those really only ultimately become guidelines.
Why does it have to be in terms of influence and breaking?
My response is to say that for a group of players that have played at least more than a couple of games together, even in the situation where the GM is directing the story entirely and less of the collaborative spirit that Chad was talking about, the players can still protect the integrity of the GM story.
Right.
They can everybody's see at least some on of board. It coming and go, I know not to take control of the king because that's not what's going to help this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, along those lines, there's actually something that came up on the forums when someone was asking me to sort of explain what I had in mind in terms of deciding which NPCs to pick. And this is kind of relevant to what we're talking about now. And one of the things that I said to him was that my rule of thumb personally when deciding whether to take an NPC or not is I tend to go toward ones that have yet to be described by the game master. That the game master describes a particular NPC, I presume that they might be important, and therefore I will go for one they haven't described. If they describe the shopkeeper, I will instead be a shopper. Penguin Sushi, which is his handle on the forums, is the guy that I was talking to.
Sounds delicious.
And he phrased this in a way that actually is pretty apropos to my approach. That is really, this is not about taking NPCs so much as, in a sense, making NPCs.
Yeah.
And by design, they are, once again, inconsequential characters. You know, I'm not making out of thin air a giant death robot or something. You know, it's always these inconsequential color characters. Now, there's another angle, though, Chris, and this one you might object to less, because this
I
one...
I hate everything. I'm old.
Does it involve not trusting your players?
Actually, well, you know, well, no. You'd have to have some player trust for this one.
That's right. All right,
well, let's find out. I'll lay it out there, and we'll let Chris be the first one to feel it. This came up at the end of our last game session. Pat's character was not at the place where the rest of our player characters were headed. And so, as a result, what Chad said to Pat is he said, Pat, so you're not sitting this one out for the coming battle.
And I ended it on a climax right before a big fight.
Two options, because one ones I threw out, I said, well, I have a bunch of my other Knoll henchmen with me. Would you like to play one of them? And Chad made a counter proposal and said, well, or instead, Pat, would you like to play some of the bad guys? And so here was the game master. Now, certainly, I think this one should be initiated by the game master, not the player. But the game master is offering to the player, you could take on the role of some of the monsters. Mm-hmm. So you're involved in the scene and involved in the situation, even though the player character is nowhere to be seen.
I've actually evolved it even further than that in talking to Wayne.
Because I was excited about this idea.
Technically speaking, Wayne is not part of this combat either. So you're going to have two people sitting it out. So you're going to have two players in and two players out, and I really lazy and hate combat. So why not give all the bad guys to the two players? Not script it, not say, well, at this point this happens, at this point this happens. I just give them all the cards in my hand and say, here, you two play the hand versus those
you
two guys.
You have made something, you've evolved it for certain. This is going to be not unique, but it's going to be a lot different than anything that we've ever encountered before. Mm-hmm. If it
when
was
he
just
talked
gonna be
about
me,
it, I came up with character concepts for these guys.
Well, that's
their histories and things.
I mean, Wayne's originally you're talking about I'll play one of the guys that's fighting against the troop. Now, if you're saying hand it over,
I'm
this becomes
it all over.
Much more. It's almost like playing a battle strategy game, like a tabletop battle game, and it's player versus player. So that, yeah, that's going to be a lot different. I think it's going to be, it can be cool and a lot of fun, but it's certainly not going to be what we're used to.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, because I said, when I heard the idea, it's like, yeah, Chad has well-developed NPCs we're fighting, but we don't get a lot of in-character while we're in fighting from the NPCs. We get some, but he's worried about everything we're doing, describing these cool scenes. I'm thinking, what are these guys' personalities? Where are they going to yell while they're fighting? I've got all of the stuff in mind. I think it could come to a really good fight.
Okay, well, I said I pitched this to Chris. Yep. So
I honestly, I would have absolutely no problem with that whatsoever. None. I mean, and the reason why, if you care to know, would be because my assumption, if I was sitting around that table and I knew that Chad was going to go do this, my assumption going into the next session then when this battle was about to happen would be that Chad is the GM, basically almost exactly as Chad described. He gave them everything, and these are my assumptions. This may or may not be exactly what he did, mm-hmm. but my assumption would be that he gave them everything, he gave them guidelines, but then just let them go ahead and run free with what they needed to do. And then I, as a player, am believing everything that's coming at me. Doesn't matter if how much Wayne's mm-hmm. playing it up or how much Pat is getting tactical. Doesn't matter. I'm believing it as it's coming at me because
right.
my assumption is that Chad just gave them a bare bones outline and let them go, and we'd roll with it. But it's coming from that, I don't want to say authoritative positions, but it's coming from that position, totally behind that.
That's the cool blurry line, because you'd have no idea what Chad had handed over and what we just threw in on our own.
You know, if the situation had been, though, where we were about to get in the fight and we knew that Wayne and Pat's characters weren't there and Chad just said, here, you guys go ahead and run the battle. Suddenly, as a player, I'm not going to believe that this battle really carries any relevance to the storyline whatsoever.
But it does.
The only potential concern I could see, and once again, this comes back to if you've got a reasonable group. This
Wayne isn't, and Pat get together and say, hey, let's introduce a Tarrasque.
No. Yeah. More. I think you're going where I'm going to go here too, Dan.
Yeah, and I don't think a mature, reasonable group would do this, but certainly there are groups or that guy, even in mature groups, that would do it. What Jeff and I are headed to do is to rescue Wayne's character.
Right.
Therefore, Wayne could, quite frankly, throw the fight simply because he wants us to succeed.
I was going to go the opposite way because the only thing that would say concern me in a situation like this is here's the variable you've got. When the GM is controlling the combat, when they're doing everything and things are going really sideways for the player characters.
Oh, they back off.
The GM mm-hmm. can say, okay, we'll back off a little bit on there. This side or the other.
He has two hit dice, not four.
And exactly. Yeah. In this situation, because I can already tell you, I know going in, I'm going to be playing these bad guys to win. I don't want to pull punches. I want to play him to win the fight because I'm going to go the other way. I'm not going to pull my punches mainly because my character's not involved. So who cares? But you can face that too. Like
he's going to be working out some aggression because we left him behind.
That's right. I mean, yes, you can go either way. You can. I agree with Dan. You can go both ways.
So did.
You guys can go. You know, you can either have the players would just totally throw the fight or whatever. Or the other hand, I mean, you could get some really competitive people and they're going playing just like they're playing their player characters going, I'm playing this guy to win. He's going balls out. He's going to do everything he has. He's going to throw everything he's got. All these spells that Chad might not have used because it's going a little sideways. I'm going to like cast three or four of them around. But,
I guess this is going to be interesting. I mean, in my case, I want the story to continue on. I want the story to basically keep evolving. So I don't want the other player characters to be killed. I want it to be really tough. I want to try to beat them, yes. But I don't think I want to have that kill.
Here's the thing. How do you do that, though? Okay, if you are genuinely playing these characters, like you say, you've already come up with personalities for these f***ers. So how do you get in here and say, oh, okay, yeah, I'm killing you. Oh, but I want my guys to win.
Because there's a difference.
And you pull off at the very end.
Because there's a difference between showing up to try to win and showing up to slit people's throats. You are there to slit people's throats. You are there to win and provide a challenge. Slit their throats.
I'm with Chad on this one.
It's not that hard.
I'm with Chad on this one. God mode is boring.
Yes.
But if as a game master you don't want the party to succeed, you should not be game mastering.
Right.
Well, Pat's protecting the continuity of the character who would have an adversarial role.
Yes.
Wayne's protecting the continuity of the game, which is what the experienced player
would
do.
You know what? I think that that's going to be really interesting because these two views can balance each other out. Or
yeah they would.
Let's throats. I mean, we're going to see.
You're dead.
Can't wait.
Just remember, Pat, if you kill me, I start playing Rot. And Rot's much less helpful.
I'd like to take this opportunity to remind the players that Bernal was around the corner.
He sat there and watched you choke in the bleachers.
That's true. Oh, man.
I want to pick this up for a macro level just for a second.
Okay.
The party is not split intentionally in this situation. It just happened to be we were at a certain part of town doing something.
Oh, yes, no. It was split intentionally.
All right.
It's your fault. Okay. You're the one who instigated it.
Hold on here. Right. Hold on here. We are throwing way too much stuff out without any context whatsoever.
Brief gaming story.
So yes.
All right.
I think we're going to allow a gaming story.
Brief
here.
Gaming story is Pat's character is the lord of a town. Mm-hmm. And there is an uprising within the town. There's a rebellion and a counter rebellion and all this stuff going on. And there have been several assassination attempts against him. And
I'm sorry.
This is where it came up, where he was getting strangled in a bleacher. And one of my other PCs, one of the lesser gnolls, just kind of sat there and watched it happen.
Nice.
Because his character has already suffered 3 assassination attempts in like a week. And because
the course of a month.
And because my character, my main character, Gnarl, already feels like a failure for having let Pat come so close to death once, when he feels like he's, you know, bloodbound to him and all this stuff.
Now, just so you know, Pat is out there taking risks.
Yes.
You know, so he's putting himself out there.
Jeff's character.
Can Chad say Jeff's character's name?
No.
Bernaldo.
Bernaldo.
Bernaldo. Yes, I can. Bernaldo.
So
why is Bernie's name so important?
So I mispronounce his name.
His character runs a spy network within the city. Wayne's character gets captured. Jeff's character finds out where Wayne's being held, but knows he needs some muscle to get him out. So what he does is he sends a note to Gnarl, basically saying, I know where he is, you've got the muscle to go get him, and I don't want to put the Lord in any further danger by alerting him, so could you bring your muscle over here on the sly and kind of go get Wayne's character back? And so he plays to my character's very recent and very festering guilt over having failed once. And so for the first time in his entire life, because I wrote the society to be very honest,
they're evil but honest. They have no motivation to ever lie.
Yeah,
they will just kill you before they will lie to you.
Yeah, why lie about it when they're open about it? We're going to kill you and eat you.
But I cracked that.
Oh, yes, you did.
So he, for the first time in his life, because of this guilt note from Jeff's character, he walks up to Pat's character and says, yeah, I have to check on something in the city. I'll be back later tonight.
No, I have to check on something in the orphanage.
Orphanage.
And then you're like, okay. And then you leave, you're like, what?
I was so shocked because, you know, being a player character at the table, you know what's going on, right? I mean, you do. So I'm expecting, okay, Gnarl's going to come up to my character and say, we found Sir William. Let's go get him. And I'm like, instead he comes up and says, I've got to go to the orphanage. I'll see you later. And I'm like, what the f***?
You actually said, you're not going to tell me?
I did. I said, you're not going to tell me? No, I'm not.
It was wonderful moment.
It was. It totally hit me out of left field. It's one of the few times I can probably count on one hand the times that I've genuinely been shocked at a table. And that was definitely one of them. Because I'm like, I didn't see it coming at all. I'm like, what?
I absolutely am loving this game. I am
character
loving
evolution.
The game.
That is character evolution.
The characters are deep. The characters are changing. The characters are into it. The players are really getting excited about their characters.
It's this evil gnoll. This evil gnoll's champion. And for the first time in his life, he is afraid, not because of a martial threat, but because he's finally found someone he gives two craps about and is afraid of losing him.
And on the other hand, Pat's character, because this is not typical D&D verse, we're just using the rules, Pat's character is 1,000 years old, and he's evil, and he jumps from body to body to body, destroying the soul of each host he inhabits, and his whole people do this, and they control the land through their magic, and this lie that you can volunteer your body as a host that you may one day become immortal when instead they just destroy your soul. They are evil, evil f**ks. And his character is 1,000 years old, and his lorddom that he had was destroyed 5 years ago. And he's sort of been out on the run, and they live because they're so afraid of dying in these gilded jails, right? These gilded palaces where they never leave because they're fortresses and they never want to die because they're living so long and all this sort of stuff. And that's taken away from him. Everything is taken away from him, and he has to live on the road like normal people. And he falls in with this bodyguard, and he falls in with this bard, and later on he falls in with this, well, I can't
terribly
really
terribly mysterious
man who I can't really talk about. And they go and they're a wandering minstrel show, and it's just like, how the hell did this even happen? But through the course of their adventures, Pat's character changes ever so slightly. And we had this great, great moment where one of the evil NPCs knows what Pat is. Pat's revealed himself and he has control of this kingdom and he's a lord now. He's back on a seat of power. And they're trying to kidnap Sir William, the bard, who really isn't knighted in any way, but just calls himself Sir William. And there's a rebellion going on in Pat's kingdom. And this evil Noel has a book with all the names in it.
Not my Noel, different Noel.
Different evil Noel. Yeah. Has a book with all the names in it. And he goes, and after this big, huge fight and all this stuff, he looks at Pat's character, whose name is Serenade. He's like, I will trade you this book for him. You let me walk out of the city unmolested, and I will give you the rebellion. Who they were fomenting. This guy was fomenting the rebellion. He was going to turn over the whole rebellion so that he can get Sir William. And
that's all Saren's character does, is take people for his own good.
Yes. Yeah. And Saren was looking at this, and he stopped. And he's just like, no. And then the guy looks at him and is like, what is his life to you? You're 1,000 years old. How many friends have you had in your lifetime? And Pat kind of looks down and counts his fingers and says, 6. And it was this, that just totally took the wind out of me. It was just this really
there.
Deep character.
I've heard the story 3 times and I still just got chills when you said 6.
And he looks at him and he goes, no, I will not turn him over. Pat's character is not a good guy. He is not becoming a good guy. He's just becoming less evil. And the character is changing in such a cool way.
And you know what? To me, that is just the sign of a great game. Mm-hmm. And we've said many times, Fear the Buddha is a monument to our failures.
Yes.
We're getting one right for once. And I mean, this to me is the hallmark of a great game. It's when your own character surprises you. If you're GMing and the group surprises you, not just with a wily plan that you didn't expect, mm-hmm. but with the direction, the growth, the humanity of yeah. what's occurring at the table. And that has been what has been so awesome about this game, is the fact that these characters are changing in such unplanned, unexpected ways, just because, you know, as we do the mental math of what is going on in their minds, they're evolving. Situations mm-hmm. change them. They're not the same person every day. Something happens and that changes their opinions. You know, my character got shaken to the point I almost considered giving him up. Mm-hmm. And what that's led to is he's still there. But for the first time in his entire life, he told a lie, and didn't just tell a lie, but he did it to protect somebody else from harm.
Right.
This is not in his equation of thinking. Mm-hmm. This has never been in his equation of thinking. It's going to be really interesting when he comes back and Saren calls him on it. I have no idea how that's going to go, because he's going to have no good answer for it.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't have to worry about that. Pat's going to kill you.
He's not going to.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, you will make it back.
Yeah. We're not going to get Saren. Pat's so pissed I lied to him that he's going to kill me in the combat. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It's fortunate I have other Gnolls like to play. It's like paranoia with Gnolls. They just roll another one out.
They all look alike anyway.
Yeah. They're all security level brown.
Okay, let me clarify my earlier remark then.
Okay, Bernaldo.
Thank you. The GM's story did not require the party to split up at this time.
Mm-hmm.
That happened due to player interaction.
Right.
Nameless player interaction. But sometimes the GM's story does logically result in a situation where the party kind of would logically split up.
Oh my god, the guest is bringing us back around to our main topic.
What's
so up with that? Embarrassed.
And the GM usually, you know, that's a pain in the butt to run sometimes. So the GM, you know, like, you're wearing handcuffs. Screw it. You can't split up. The situation you're describing mm-hmm. where the players jump into other characters is a perfect way of handling party splits
right.
to make that story make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tool any GM can pick up and use.
Yeah.
Chris, nothing.
I think Chris fell asleep while we were telling our gaming story.
He couldn't hear us. He's listening to Kicking in the Dice Bags.
See, somebody was telling a gaming story and I just totally dozed off.
I don't blame you.
I was just waiting to hear your objection. I mean, surely you hated something in there.
What? No, I actually...
players talking or...
Hey, I'm supposed to just stand there and illustrate everything that happens to you and then tell you what you do.
That's right. That's right.
Chris just puts on a puppet show.
You should be honored for just being allowed to be in his presence while he is running this game.
To observe the game.
Exactly. Coming, yeah, the people who are coming to Fear the Con, I have no idea. Basically, I'm going to run the entire BattleTech event myself. They can watch me do the battle. You know, run the battle.
They can pick which side to root for, and they do get to yell whatever chant you have at the start of each turn.
Yeah, the chants will be bleachers.
Two sets of bleachers for each team, and then Chris is just going at it. He's even going to make the pew, pew, pew sounds of the lasers.
I think there's an undiscovered art form here. You know how they have like the one man plays,
mm-hmm.
one man role playing games.
I'm liking it.
Wow, that's horrific.
Actually, that sounds
that's
just
the
really
true
abysmal.
Lone wolf.
Yeah, it's creative masturbation, but
best kind.
Did we ever even talk about our topic?
No, we
no,
didn't.
We never
actually. We yeah, we had a main topic.
How
for
far it. Are we into this?
Yeah, we had a main topic because I brought up the idea if we could do this as a main topic of just these the yeah. old topics
hey,
doing the follow-up.
This way. Three but, episodes now.
Yeah. This I tell you, this one got completely away from us because we presumed we were just going to do two quick hits to kind of...
I told you, man. I told you this update. Would be a main topic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did not believe it, but Wayne, you were right. But that's okay because what we had in mind for the main topic now just means we have something for, not next episode because that's already outlined, but three episodes from now. At which point we will be talking about Mary Sue characters, and mm-hmm. we've got all kinds of thoughts outlined on that. But in the meantime, it looks like the discussion that we had right here pretty much...
This is what you get when you ask me for my opinion on something. I totally ended up derailing this thing, because you're like, no, wait, I want to ask Chris. What do you have to say, Chris? And then we all just got into this.
All right,
Chris,
we won't make that mistake again.
So, Chris... No, please don't. Yeah. Treat me like Pat, would you?
Ouch.
Yeah, so speaking of which, we'd actually have the makings of a soundboard. I'm going to bring that up again in a later episode. I need to get some details together, but the gentleman sent that to me. I want you to know I have not forgotten you. We are going to come back to that.
Nice.
So we'll talk about who that was and what he sent me here in a couple episodes. We will come back to that. For anyone who's not keeping up with the blog, the short stories at work has been absolutely kicking my ass inside out.
Yes.
So I'm behind on a lot of things right now, which I apologize for, but we are at least basically back on track here with the show, and of course, Fear the Con is still coming up.
When this man has to miss his Sunday gaming, you know it's bad.
I pulled a 16-hour yesterday. Anyway, enough whining for me. So, as for you guys, you have great games. Get signed up for Fear the Con 4 as a player or as a GM, and we will catch you next time.
Trust your players!
Trust your GM.
I'll jump into Chad. See ya!
Why did I sound gay?
That didn't sound very realistic.
Because you were being authentic.
Exactly.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.